Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we're going to be discussing the politics of political party coalition in Nigeria, looking towards the Nigeria's 2027 election. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Babayosule. Babayosule is professor of political science in the Department of Political and Administrative Studies at the National University of Lesotho. He's also the author of many books and articles. His recent book published in 2023 is titled Political Party Financing and Electoral Politics in Nigeria's Fourth Republic. He also co-authored another book with Professor Usman Sambo, titled Presidential Election in Nigeria's Fourth Republic. Babayo, it's a pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to a very interesting conversation with you.
Yeah, it is my pleasure, Doc. Good afternoon. It is nice meeting you on this conversation and on this platform. It is really a pleasure and an honor to me to join you in this discussion. Thank you very much.
Yeah, same here. I feel honored as well. Same here. Let's begin. So Nigeria has just finished. It looks like it's just yesterday that Nigeria had its last election. We're already talking about 2027, the forthcoming election. And we started seeing the political board, the chess game. You know, people are already planning, and alliances are being formed. And there's a new opposition party that is a coalition of different parties and different elites, former presidential candidates. But then again, this seems to be a pattern that we've seen in Nigeria's political history, especially in the Fourth Republic. Do you think this forms that pattern, or is this different?
Well, thank you very much, Prof. To begin with, the issue of political parties in Nigeria's Fourth Republic is complex, is multidimensional, and it is really not an easy topic of analysis, because no matter how or where you look at it, you will find that Nigerian parties are always peculiar and unique in their character, although you may classify them within the context of the African parties. But even that, to me, I tend to adopt a reductionist method in describing Nigeria's parties than a generalized perspective of an African party or African parties, because some of the characteristics of the Nigerian parties seems to depart from the usual norm of the African parties in terms of organization, institutionalization, operation, and other activities. Yes, we have seen, in essence, you can say that in the history of the country, we have over almost 150 political parties from 1922 to date, but the Fourth Republic is more interesting because it took the largest share of almost 70% or 80% of the total political parties registered. From 1999 to date, we have counted over 100 registered parties, although some of them were registered, deregistered, some of them were re-registered, all this. Now, the issue is the foundation ideally, a political party is supposed to drive and mobilize a movement of like minds with a particular or specific interest that can generate people's support and that can also guide people's directions toward politics, toward issues, toward policies. But in the context of the Nigerian political arena, in most cases, parties emerge, assemble, dissemble at the same time, just for one. Although I have a different opinion from what most Nigerian scholars believe, or rather global scholars, that Nigerian parties lack ideology. No, they have an ideology. The fundamental ideology behind our parties just scramble for power. So it is ideology to me, because to have the zeal to always contest and struggle to capture power is also an ideology of it. Is God, we consider they are power parties. I tag them this way based on my own study of the parties and their characteristics. Especially I come up with this position in my latest book published, Nigerian Political Parties in the Fourth Republic: Evolution, Characteristics, and Dynamic of Transformation. So they have come, sometimes they align, even the alliance or the coalition itself can be categorized into different groups. Sometimes there is a mild coalition, and sometimes there is a very strong coalition. For example, if you take a kind of a coalition between NCNC of Dr. Nnamdi Azikiwe of blessed memory and that of Tafawa Balewa Sardona of blessed memory, that's MPC, I think it is a very strong coalition because it led to a situation whereby a government is pumped, in which if none of them entered into a coalition with the other, there is a possibility that none might form a government in the First Republic. And then power is somehow equally shared at the same time. One party having the privilege of having the office of the president, and the other having of the prime minister. But if you look at the coalition and their patterns in the Fourth Republic, for example, from 1999, most people do not even know that coalition have been taking place in various elections, but in such a way that it will not catch off attention. For example, in 2003, out of almost 30 parties registered by INEC, about 23 or 27 of them declared that they are not fielding any candidate, but rather they are supporting the PDP presidential candidate. And at this point, then, it is paramount to conceptualize or to compartmentalize the coalition itself, that it is different from merger, and then it is different also from party switching. That's the official term. They call it decamping in our language. You know it. Because some people are confusing the three. I have given many lectures and speeches on this, that we need to differentiate. In a coalition, I may come and join your government without necessarily leaving my party. Just like, for example, we can say that FCT Minister Nyeso Nweke now, he is having a coalition with APC, because he is still aligning with PDP in terms of official identification as a party member. But he is serving in the government of APC, and he worked for the success of the government of APC in 2023. So he is a coalition. He didn't decamp, and neither also from a merger. And when we talk of a merger, we know all what it means. We have seen what happened in terms of our APC merger in 2013, which led to the former year where the CPC, some faction of ABGA, actually led by Rochas Okorocha, and the ACN, ANPP, and then the new PDP, which was not officially part of the merger, but later joined the party through what you call the decamping. So therefore, there is this alignment. In 2007 general elections, the same thing also occurred, where about 40 registered parties, although many of them are fielded candidate for the presidential contest, but there are many parties that even with the presidential candidate, they still decided that they are supporting the PDP candidate, late President Umaru Yar'Adua, and they did that. And then in 2011, it also occurred the same thing. So also in 2015. So this always used to occur. But the magnum opus or the zenith of the coalition, I think, started attracting attention in Nigeria's public republic from 2013 with the emergence of APC, which are to me came in essence. I believe with the submission of one scholar, Ibn Khaldun, that for any strong organization or an institution or a state, within it is foundation of growth. It also has within it the seat of it is destruction. This is exactly what happened to PDP. If you look at the foundation for the establishment of the People's Democratic Party, you can see that right from the inception, the kind of interest, the type of groups that came up to form that party cannot sustain their diverse interests. Retired army generals, retired security personnel ranging from military and paramilitary, seasoned politicians for many decades, multinational business tycoons, technocrat, bureaucrat, and almost it is very difficult to contain the interest of all this and combine it within the ideology and the principles of that party from the beginning. In fact, it is even said that PDP is even recommended, that it is commendable the way they were able to sustain their internal conflict up to 2015 because of the interest. Some are even projecting that it might have teared off right from 2003 or 2007. So now coming back, but the major problem is, I had a privilege to interview one of the founding fathers of PDP. That why is it that the party is always embroiled in seemingly irreconcilable conflict and internal crisis? He responded this way, that when the party was formed, the pioneer acting chairman of the party, I think Sunday Awoni, yes, that insisted that principles must be established and reaffirmed in order to have a democratic party. But unfortunately, he mentioned that some party members diverted and cornered parties' interests into a personal interest. And that was the beginning or the foundation whereby you can see that PDP lacks a very strong ideology, except the one that I mentioned, that the scramble for power, and maybe the second ideology, you can say, pursuing neoliberal interests, which they did during their 16 years, and which APC is also doing. So comparing the parties of PDP and APC, you can simply say that they almost share similar characteristics, not even characteristics, even membership. I can say that without any iota of doubt, that almost 80 to 90% of APC members are past PDP members, and past PDP members are current APC members. Maybe with the exception of few leaders like late Muhammadu Buhari and the current President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, almost you hardly identify an APC member that was not coming from the former PDP. And perhaps this is the simple explanation why they are behaving the way they are behaving, because it is just as simple for me to remove the shed of my body and just replace it with another color, while I am myself. By just changing my color, I'm just a chameleon-like acting, but there is nothing that changed. So the zenith of coalition in this country captured people's interest and attention with APC. In fact, many people had given up that there might be a party or a candidate that may likely unseat PDP for the next 60 years, and they had altered themselves such. But with the coming of APC in 2013 and the way APC managed an opposition in a most very democratic way, always attacking PDP on issues, on policies, and other things, attracting people and also attracting the campus from various perspectives. This led to impact. Even before the 2015 general elections, for every keen follower of Nigeria's politics and election, you know that PDP was pursuing a lost battle, because all indicators pointed that PDP was going and APC was coming. That happened. But then, the same thing in essence, one of the consequences of the coalition is that now some people from particularly the APC side are now saying that they are sidelined, from the CPC, that is from the Muhammadu Buhari-led CPC coalition part, are now saying that they are sidelined, they are marginalized by the ruling APC, so they are now rushing to put. In fact, this is the foundation or the major reason that they are offering for their own movement to form a coalition. Now a coalition is on ground. In essence, I have never seen in the history of elections where an electoral cycle, people notice has already informed us, enlightened us that an electoral cycle begins immediately after an election. Yeah, I have seen it practically in Nigeria. In fact, I'm even trying to write a paper on Pippa Nori's analysis of electoral cycle and Nigeria's political imbroglio starting from 2023 to that. Because to me, immediately after the 2023 general elections, campaign started. Alignment, realignment, de-alignment, and all this started immediately. If you look at the way...
Let me pause you a bit. I know there's a lot to talk about. We'll come to this current coalition. Let's talk about, for our viewers that don't understand this republic. So the first republic, the republics define the times, the periods when Nigeria has been under a civilian government, you know, elections and everything. So the first republic was when Nigeria had elections, isn't it? The independence from 1960 all the way to 1966. And then we had interruption with the military, and then Nigeria had another second republic, I think 79, and then was also interrupted by another military in 83. And then there was a botched third republic in the 1993 elections that was botched. And then we've now been in the fourth republic since 1999, where we've been enjoying this long period of stuff. Now, you mentioned the first republic. You mentioned we had, it was more regional or ethno-regional. We had NCNC. Can you hear me? We had NCNC, which was regionally or geopolitically tagged the Igbo party. Can you hear me? When that happened. Okay, yeah. So I was saying in the first republic, you made some kind of comparison. So I wanted to briefly touch on the difference. So we had NCNC, which was geopolitically tagged the Southeast or Igbo party. I have the Alliance for Democracy, which was the Yoruba. They had the other parts, the NDC.
Thank you very much. Prof, one of the merits that one must give to PDP and APC as ruling parties in the post republic, that is before coming back to your question, is that at least they have a national outlook, because there is no state that you will go without finding either PDP or APC, either previously ruling or ruled or is now ruling, which is a merit at least, because it is now our previous culture of ethnic, regional, and religious parties now to a more national parties, but without an ideology compared to the previous ones. Now, coming back to the First Republic, which it begins from 1960 after winning political independence to 1966. Before that, the Republic was terminated by the military intervention. Now, the parties, if you look at it, you know, the major factor to me that led to how the parties emerge and how they behave, maybe we must go back and trace it to the 1944-46 Sir Arthur Richard Constitution, which introduced regionalism and by extension, the foundation of Nigeria's federalism. These regions were autonomous, independent, but were also reporting to the British colony in Lagos. This also came off with an opportunity for election into the House of Representatives, which was already powered by activists and unionists in Lagos in 1922, which was granted partially, but was expanded in the 1944 Constitution. Then because of that, now already we have seen that the NCNC was trying to nationalize its activities under ZIG. But unfortunately, because it was already dominating in Lagos and in the Southwest, and almost in the southeast and central Nigeria, and until when a plebiscite occurred, which led to the separation of the Cameroonians. And now from the National Council for Nigeria and the Cameroons, it now turned into Nigerian citizens only. Now, after that, immediately a traditional or rather a cultural pan-Yoruba organization, Egbe Omo Odudua, was converted into a party action group by Awolowo, Akintola, and others. And the same Pan-Hausa Fulani Northern cultural group, that's Jam'iyyar Mutanen Arewa, was converted into a party, Northern People's Congress, NPC. Followed also by another one from NEPA, Northern Element Progressive Association, to now Northern Element Progressive Union, NEPU. So when the struggles by party politics and the struggle for political independence began, the major problem encountered was that the NPC and the NEPU were combined only within the northern region. They could not make a very frantic effort to expand toward the south or the east. And it also occurred with the action group to a certain extent. It was only NCNC that to a considerable level was able to expand to some part of northern Nigeria, specifically Plateau, Benue, and some part of Kano. Now, the nationalists now started pursuing political independence within a parallel framework of regional, ethnic, and religious interest, even though you cannot say that they are devoid of ideology. For example, we all know that the action group has an ideology of pursuing pre-education, some kind of regional development. We know that NCNC was a radical party that adopted militant nationalism just to see that the British just go back home, enough is enough. And then while the NPC is a little bit conservative, is preserving and is trying to drag even the political freedom to a certain time in order to have some also leverage that they will lean on when it comes to the political independence. So that continues, and the politics continues this way, the campaigning, the election pattern, and all this. So that by 1959, when the independence election was conducted, no party was able to secure a majority vote. And that was because almost, if you look at the pattern of the board, I will say almost 100% of the board of MPC came from the northern part of the country, while 100% of the board for the NEPU came from only Kano and some part of Kaduna then. While if you look at the board, almost 95% of the board of action group also came from the west, the Yoruba-dominated area, while the MPC also had majority of it is bought from the east, or rather what constitute present Nigeria's south-south and southeast. But the MPC made a headway in getting some votes, some significant ones from the west, which drastically affected the performance of AG in that zone and also in some part of central Nigeria. So because of that, no party was able to secure a majority to form a government. And since Nigeria was bequeathed with a Westminster parliamentary model of governance, we had no choice. In order to have a prime minister and form a government, the only alternative is to go for re-election, or if we cannot go for another election, is to form a coalition. But then the fear at that time was that even if election will be reconducted three times again, there was every tendency and every possibility the outcome will be the same. So we'll just continue to waste money, waste time, waste resources, drag our political freedom. Because of all this, the nationalists now started thinking of an alternative. And that was what led to the coalition. Initially, it was a dialogue which started between the AG and NCNC, but it could not materialize. Then another dialogue between the MPC and the AG, it could not be actualized. Then finally, the NCNC and the MPC settled down, formed a government. And then we had what we had in the First Republic, and the government was running, unfortunately, before what happened has happened. That was briefly the First Republic politically in terms of party politics. But there were so many crises, conflict, and issues, even with the parties, even during that time, to the extent that some parties even threatened not to participate in the 1964 federal elections until some measures were taken by the ruling party of the, particularly the MPC, especially the AG. It even threatened to boycott the election, while the NCNC only agreed that it may boycott the election if some principles are not met. But then they were, that also repeated itself in the Second Republic, exactly, between the UPN and the MPP and the MPN. So that's why I said the Nigerian parties have a unique or peculiar character, and it seems they have been retaining or maintaining the same character separate from most African parties.
I want to, Babayo, let me. The historical context is very, very important, because any nation that neglects history will always repeat the mistake of. Like Ivani said, that there seems to be a pattern, but then again, you mentioned the distinction with the Fourth Republic, and that also speaks to the issue of the federal character that is enshrined in the constitution, where each party has to have some kind of like percentage across the whole 36 states. But I guess the question that I want to ask now is this: if we look at, let's come back to the Fourth Republic. Let's focus on the Fourth Republic and say, from the Fourth Republic, when Obasanjo, I think it was in 2003, like you mentioned, wanted to go for the third term. And you were saying 30 parties wanted to support that. That is also not without antecedent. I think Abacha, during the military, wanted five parties also kind of like wanted to support Abacha as the sole president for the five parties. So we moved on from there to 2013 with the emergence of the ACN, that then Drew Buhari, sacked the PDP, and then we've seen ACN. Now again, we're seeing another after ACN from 2015, now this is about 10 years, we see another coalition, the ADC coalition, coming on. But the last election, which you've not written about, I know you always write about several elections, is quite distinct, because we had like a third force in the Labour Party with President, that threw like a spanner in the works of the usual kind of like party politics or party this thing we have. Now, in this new coalition that is brewing, the African Democratic Congress, with Amaechi of the former PDP, like you rightly said, these are the same people in different parties. Atiku, which is a PDP, we see Nasser El-Rufai. I don't know which party he's always been in, then with P2P.
Well, APC, SDP, now ADC.
Now, with this new coalition that is formed, what can you say about this new coalition in this trajectory of political parties in the nation of Nigeria? What chance do they stand, and what complexity do they present? Does it present?
Thank you very much. Yeah, honestly, to me, I just look at it from this perspective, that history is trying to repeat itself, that ADC is just like an APC in motion from 2013 to 14 and 15. Well, honestly, in the first place, we can say that before the coalition, that opposition was almost dead in the country. Because if you look at the way most of the governors in the country are rapidly switching allegiance from the opposition party to the ruling APC, senators, reps, and other top political echelons, you will see that opposition was almost dead. The major opposition, PDP, and I can say LP, of course, because as you just mentioned in your question, one cannot dismiss LP with Peter Obi in it, not as a major opposition. In fact, this is a major point of distinction, which entirely differentiated the 2023 general elections in Nigeria's history from the previous six elections conducted in 1999, 2003, 2007, 2011, and 2015, because all these five previous elections were just almost a two-horse race. You may have, like, for example, in the 2019 general elections, we have 73 presidential contestants, but we all know that it was just a straight line battle between the then incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari and the main opposition, Atiku Abubakar. But in 2023, there was even a port pause in addition to the third pause, because Tinubu aside in the ruling party, Atiku has a major opposition in the PDP, Peter Obi in the LP, and then Konkoso, of course, in NNPP. Even though Konkoso was only able to take charge of his own listed, which it was anticipated even before the election, but still is a major pause because the state he is controlling is a swing state.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would like to win that state because of the quantity of the votes, and also because of sometimes in politics also there is psychological message that he wins Kano, yes, he wins Lagos. So there are some states that if you win, that alone is enough to demoralize your co-contestant, your opposition. So the coalition to me is it has its own antecedent. It has its own post-collusion problems. It is not even taking shape right now. We have now seen that, particularly to me, where you see Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi, is a place where no one should joke with that, because whether we like it or not, they remained for Atiku Abubakar. He remained a major prominent political figure in Nigeria's political history since 1980s, for almost now 5 decades. As for Peter Obi, in the Fourth Republic, we all know he's influential. For a governor that ruled Anambra State, is not a state that you can easily dismiss. It's one of the major economic hub powers, and also not only that, population-wise, strategically-wise, and not only that, we have seen how within less than 1 year, Peter Obi was able to revive a seemingly comatose party that was just quickly dismissed as, this one is just the usual ones. Within just less than a year, he was able to revive that party and was able to squad board that if you add this board to Atiku Abubakar's board, Tinubu will not only lose the election, but he will lose it woefully in a most disgraceful way. But the way the board went, if you look at it, even the winner had only a difference of not more than 2.7 million with Peter Obi, someone that just revived the party in less than 1 year. So to see Atiku Abubakar, someone that can go as far as penetrate the Southwest, where Tinubu was contesting to even win one or two states, someone that can also penetrate Southeast or South-South to win one or two states coming from the North, and then with Peter Obi's mighty power and the support he is now, in fact, I can say that Peter Obi is the new Buhari of Nigeria, particularly the Southeast and the South-South. If Peter Obi will contest today, I believe he will still Ghana saw this board if he didn't even get more. And particularly, Peter Obi is having an advantage of what you call the Igbo question. What I mean by the Igbo question is, Igbos as Nigerians and within the Federation, for how long will they continue to be onlookers when it comes to the plum office of the presidency? It is a very critical question. So based on this, therefore, when you see people like Atiku, like Peter Obi, and Rupai, and of course we have seen, in fact, if you like, you can say that the entire CPC block of APC, comprising the Buhari boys, like the former vice president of APC National, Dr. Salihu Muhammad Lukman, like Rupai, like the former minister of Attorney General, former minister of Justice, Abubakar Malami, and many others. All these are from the Buhari camp, and from all indications, they are all coming to the ADC. And there are many in the PDP that were aggrieved that the PDP is now being emasculated and being shattered by the wicked shadow hands, invisible shadow hands. So they are also aggrieved, and they may also come to the ADC. And even within the APC, there may be some disgruntled members that either now they are nursing their injuries, they are buying for the best time to relocate to the coalition, or they are waiting to see if the opportunities will avail them with the best means to secure a ticket. But where they didn't get, they will quickly rush. You cannot, in essence. Well, as I was saying, I think I could remember the point that I stopped at where I need to pick up Then I was saying that in this regard, you cannot joke with the coalition, because the coalition is already making APC to sit off in terms of many issues.
Let me pause you. Let's talk about this coalition. There's some inherent challenge within this coalition now. And yesterday I was reading another spanner again. There's an inherent challenge that we have four major, let me just say two major powers that now P2B has, like Riley said, Atiku Abubakar is a veteran for over 5 decades.
Yes.
He's been a former vice president. And then we have P2B that has the grassroots obedient movement behind him. And so in this power coalition and alignment, what do you think, what's going to be the level of compromise to get the right candidate among all these powers? And second, again, I've heard again, Goodluck Jonathan as well. I was hearing some stories yesterday of, you know, potential resurrection of Bruno Zita coming to the mix. First, let's talk about this in the next 5 minutes, then I can ask the next question I wanted to ask before the last question.
Okay, thank you very much. Yes, the coalition is facing a serious challenge because it seems to be there are two political stalwarts that may not likely compromise any means except to clinch the presidential ticket on that party platform. As you said, even I myself also came across such rumors, or rather some speculations, that former President Jonathan is also trying to throw his hat into the ring. Although they said that he was being lured by the former opposition PDP or former ruling PDP and now opposition, but they are now saying that he is now changing his mind also toward ADC. Now, if you can have Atiku Abubakar, Peter Obi, and Jonathan in the same party, you know that these three will not compromise anything except the presidential ticket. And I don't see probably former President Jonathan joining the coalition because he might find it very difficult due to some antecedent, because the coalition was already formed for many months. It has taken a shape, a movement, with majorly Atiku Abubakar and Peter Obi coming up with their structures, with their loyalties, with their strategies. So for now, President Jonathan to key in, they may not reject him, but he may find it very difficult to penetrate and take over and take charge of the leadership within the party. So, but for these two, for Peter Obi and Atiku Abubakar, I don't see anyone agreeing by whatever standard to relinquish his contest or his ambition for the order. Maybe we may come back and discuss this with you. They have to go for primaries. But I don't know what will be the outcome of the primaries. If they may have an agreement before the primaries, whether if anyone wins, the order will support him, either he should be taken. For example, like Atiku Abubakar, I believe, may not likely at this age and with the experience agree to be a vice presidential running mate to Peter Obi. If he lost to Peter Obi, the next best thing to do is just to become a party elder and work toward the success of the party. But if Peter Obi lost, there is a possibility that they may try to cajole him, maybe to serve as running mate to Atiku Abubakar. And if that happens, then there will be a serious challenge for the ruling party, because Atiku might come up with a majority vote from the north, and I can see Peter Obi getting many votes even in the north and also in the south and the southeast. And in this regard, I think there are also some speculations that there is a subterranean movement, that there is this nocturnal attempt by the ruling party to ensure that Atiku Obi ticket has never been, no matter what it will take. In essence, it is even, I heard from someone, but this is just something that I don't have an academic standing to support, that there was every attempt to lure Peter Obi to contest under the PDP platform. But his response was that he is not contesting just to serve as a stooge or puppet of someone. He is contesting in order to win genuinely, because he has some political ideas that he wants to also present on the table before Nigerians. So based on this, I believe Peter Obi in the coalition is a very powerful ally. No matter what I fear is, either way, if it is Atiku that secures the ticket and then Peter Obi becomes a running mate, it's a serious headache for the ruling party. If it is Peter Obi that secures the ticket and then secures the support of Peter Obi, El Rupai and others, is another serious headache for the ruling party. Either way, the coalition is a very strong move that one cannot quickly dismiss. The only issue is, consider that many Nigerians are also opinion that there is no distinguishing dividing line between the APC and the coalition in the ADC, that they are all the same, all wines in a new battle, but of the same feeder, whatever. But even with that, for those of us that are keenly following the democratic process in the country, we always want a strong coalition or a strong opposition. Even if it is not going to win, at least it will make the ruling party to sit off and pass the tax and the responsibilities that it is supposed to deliver. So therefore, the coalition opposition is already making APC jittery, based on my understanding, and it is going to be a serious challenge, no matter between these two who secures the ticket. Even if he didn't win, then there is going to be a very tight contest, except on the other way, if Jonathan key in PDP, then it is going to be a repeat of what happens in 2023, because Jonathan is a candidate. You can't definitely dismiss former President Jonathan. Definitely, he will be a post. So it all depends on how the permutations work out as the process is unveiling itself gradually.
Yeah, let me come to the last question. I know we need to have part two of this, Babayo, because this is an interesting, maybe nearing the time we have part two of this, but let me come to the last question because of time, and then I'll give you the broad chance to answer more widely. So, like you rightly said, you know, there was a movement that started in 2023 that gave hope to the Nigerian populace that maybe with P2P we can have something that is different from the usual. And I don't see that movement yielding ground to politics as usual with Atiku emerging as the, in my own opinion, I think if Atiku emerged, like you really said, it would challenge the APC, but I don't see them dismantling the APC, because I think P2P had run previously as Atiku's running mate, if I'm not mistaken, I don't see how that again would make sense. But I guess my question I want to ask is this: looking ahead, because I'm a critic of liberal multi-party election system. People have argued this stuff as well, that when you have coalitions, then it could make the incubator at first. But I'm not a fan of multi-party, the liberal adoption kind of election. So if I look at you, you've been studying this, you've been writing about this. What do you think needs to be done? So if you look at INEC, in my last book, I don't know if you've read it, Nigerian Sports Republic, A Militarized Democracy. I published it with Routledge 2 years ago. Was it last year or 2 years ago?
I haven't come across this book, but I will surely, it will be interesting. I would like to read this book.
Yeah, please. It's published by Routledge, Nigerian Sports Republic, A Militarized Democracy, where I was looking at I looked at all of these issues, look at the legacy, colonial legacy, the influence of colonial legacy, the military legacy, and looked at all this issue. But I guess if we're looking at it, what should Nigeria do? Is it time for us to rethink the system of elections? And if we're going to rethink systems of elections, what is going to be the alternative? Because it does seem that no matter, Nigerian people seem to be the victim of whoever, whether the coalition, like Chris said, is a state capture, is elites capturing power rather than people. So what system are we going to adopt that is going to favor the people? And again, looking at the hope, again, I was going to talk about INEC, because in that book, I was talking about the hope that INEC presented with the new electoral act that Buhari signed electronic transmission of results and all that. And then that hope that was dashed in 2023. What does INEC, no one needs to change. Let's go beyond the party politics now. How can the body itself, we've not talked about INEC, what needs to be changed for us to have a fair and free election, and what kind of system should we be looking at in the future? So just have a broad look and just let's conclude.
Thank you very much. If I understand you clearly, you are almost merging three issues at the same time, because we are now talking about a party reform itself. We are talking of the electoral process. We are now talking of the INEC itself as the electoral on fire. Well, there is a book we have just written with together with Professor Sambo. I think that book will be published this October, Electoral Administration and Reforms in Nigeria's Fourth Republic by Bloomsbury. Okay. So I think in that book, we have come with, to start with parties, I am also an advocate of strong functional institutions as parties instead of just rampant parties that are just haphazard. And that's why if you look at my recent book, Nigerian Political Parties in the Fourth Republic, I suggested that the process of registering and deregistering and the existence of the parties is the major problem. And that's what we need to look at, that's from the aspect of the parties. For example, just for the constitutional provision to say that you just need to have a party structures, you know, that started in 1979. After the experience of the Fourth First Republic, it was instituted in the 1979 constitution that for any party to be registered, it must have a national outlook. And how do we have that? At least you must have party escort and structures in two-thirds of the state. So in the 1999 constitution upholds this same provision. So, but the provision to me is weak. And I could remember there was a time during the Senate hearing on constitutional reforms in 2022. I made a presentation here in Northeast arguing against that section that it need to be reviewed. And a stricter measures should be put in place. For example, if you say I should just have structures in 24 states and FCT Abuja and just 1 million, and then I have a name of the party and the logo, and then just write 30 applications to the INEC. That's why now we have over 100 applications currently before the INEC table, because it is so easy to do that. And if you say that for a party to continue to exist, it just need to win either a councilor seat or just a chairmanship seat, or even just one local government during either a national assembly or presidential or state house of assembly or gubernatorial elections, you are providing a flexible means for parties to be easily registered and to easily retain their identity as parties. So this is where I am coming up that, one, the process of registration should be made more strict. First of all is that you must not only have structures in 24 states, you must have in FCT Abuja, in 36 states, and in 774 local government, which will be very difficult for any unserious organization or association or a move to meet this criteria, except a serious party. If we are not lucky, we may spend the next 30 years without having a party that will fulfill that. Second, we do not only need logo and a name and whatever, but the cost of the registration should also be made expensive, because by saying that one should just pay 1 million and register, I think it's just a bazaar, it's just a bonus. So let's make it something like 100 or 200 million, so that only a serious group that is sure that it is there to stay that will contest. As for the party survival, my own suggestion in that book is that if a party didn't win either a presidential seat or a senatorial seat or a House of Representatives seat or a gubernatorial seat or a state house of assembly seat, that party should be deregistered immediately, because that party has no business. So through this way, we may succeed in deregistering majority parties, and maybe we may only end up with only five. And then this five will also find it difficult to survive in the future if we maintain this strict or rigid prohibition. So this is when it comes to the issue of the party, because we cannot continue to be toying and joking with these parties where we love. I was a returning officer of one local government election in 2019. I know what I underwent. You will see the form EC8 where you will report, you will see it as big as it is as longer as I am. So you have to open it and be following it as if it is a mini blackboard in a classroom, which is unfair. It's difficult. Even the ballot paper, you will see the very long one. It is confusing. So that's from the aspect of the party. When it comes to the electoral aspect, I will definitely share that book with you so that you will share own views with me for future analysis. Some of the suggestion is that, you know, I would like to review it.
I would like to review it and see if you can review mine as well.
Yeah, I will share it with you definitely once it is published. So when it comes to the electoral process, I faulted the 2022 Electoral Act for not making electronic transmission mandatory. I don't think we should continue with the manual process. There are those that are arguing against it, that issue of power supply, issue of literacy level, issue of cyber security. But Nigeria is doing well in terms of cyber security, although we have the highest number of cyber crimes in the world coming either third or fourth based on the ranking. But at the same time, the Nigeria cyber security performance is 40th out of almost 180 countries. It's not bad. And at least so far, we don't have any experience of attack on INEC cyber or even any major institutional cyber. So far, I think with a very well-versed ICT expert that can ensure to guarantee and provide security, I believe we are ripe enough to go forward. If we can do it in the banking system, in the financial system, which is the most critical aspect, I think when it comes to election, too, it's as critical as financial. I believe we can do it. So electronic transmission is one. Secondly, is I want the INEC election to start from bottom to top, from bottom to top instead of from top to bottom. For example, we should start with look. First of all, I suggest that all state independent electoral commissions should be scrapped immediately. I made such a presentation even last 3 weeks or 4 weeks when the Constitutional Review Committee came to the notice again. Even though I know they may not adopt it, but it is our responsibility as intellectuals to continue to say what we feel is the best for the country. All state INEC should be cancelled. Only national INEC should conduct an election in local council polls. Because if you see the way the INEC is holding the FCT election, it is fair. Even the ruling party can lose the municipal, Abuja municipal, which means it is fair at least. Although criteria to say that the election is fair, but at least in the Nigerian context, I can argue on that. So I think INEC should only handle the election, and it should be from the bottom to the top. You will start by the local council elections, the chairman and the councillors. Then you come back to the state and House of Assembly elections. Then you go to the presidential and national assembly elections. You know, in some countries like Turkey and South Africa and others, you need to qualify by winning 50% of the total vote at the grassroots election before you can qualify for national elections. I think, even though I'm not saying that this should be, but I'm saying that if we start from bottom to the top, at least we should be able to make it in. So transparency should be actualized. You know, this was the usual tradition until when President Shehu Shagari altered it in the 1983 election, when he faced a very strong challenge. When Awolowo and Dr. Zeg decided to form a coalition, just like what we are discussing, in order to unseat Shagari in 1983, Shagari now decided that instead of the election to start from the local council, then it should start from the presidential. So that if any state governor did not work for the success of Shagari's MPN, then they are crumbling, they are crashing together with that governor. So based on that, it was just like a threat that was used, which led Shagari to win. In 1999, Obasanjo adopted the same thing in 2003, because in 1999, you know, the local council elections started. But then in 2003, Obasanjo adopted the Shagari style and start from the from top to bottom. So I think this is what INEC need to do in terms of electronic transmission. State independent commission should be scrapped. And then the election should start from bottom to top so that there should be a grassroots democratic politics. Now, in terms of the INEC itself, it needs reforms and restructuring. One, the appointment of the leadership should now come to me. I am moderating what Justice West Committee I recommended. They recommended that it should be appointed by NJC, Nigerian Judicial Council. But to me, I'm not saying that, yeah, it should be appointed. Yeah, that committee should have at least some pressure groups, including the MBA, ASU, Nigerian Medical Association, Nigerian Labor Congress, Nigerian National Association of Nigerian Students, and then other various pressure groups. It should show one representative. That this representative will now sit down and advertise a vacancy for either the INEC chairman or any director, or whatever, or even consider the appointment of the national commissioners. Then they should be the ones to advertise, they should be the ones to scrutinize, they should be the one to appoint. National Assembly should ratify. The hands of executive should be entirely pushed out from the process of the appointment. This is what, when it comes to one of the recommendations, this is one of the recommendations that I am making when it comes to the INEC. Now, the second reforms when it comes to INEC is that I am thinking that some of the provisions in the Electoral Act in terms of maximum expenditure limit per candidate, in terms of sanctions, particularly the sanctions, they are too weak. INEC should come up with stricter measures, and then should went to the National Assembly and ask for at least a reform of these sections. Even though I interviewed a senator, sorry, not to make you to laugh, I asked him that, why are you always reluctant when it comes to laws that are very critical and that are very beneficial when it comes to anti-corruption crusade, you don't want to pass it? He said that, are you expecting criminals to make a law that will now put them in the net of criminality? That was how he responded. So I just laugh and smile and say, well, probably whenever I am a distinguished senator, whenever I am reporting this, your response, I will always quote you. I will not say I'm the one saying it, so that you will not call me before the House and ask me to defend. So actually, I think these are the reforms that I think should involve in terms of party, in terms of electoral process, and in terms of INEC itself. Yes.
Yeah, Baba, unfortunately, we are running out of time, but this is amazing.
I really enjoyed it.
It is very interesting too. I enjoyed the questions and even the analysis, because sometimes you touchlight the way for me too. So you see, it is really interesting and nice also meeting you. I already met you many years ago through your work. So I'm just meeting
you.
I will send you details of my Yes, please.
And then see if you can review, then I'll also look at your book as well. But this thing is echoing back, so I'll just let them continue the conversation. Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, thank you very much. It is my pleasure to have this conversation this afternoon.
Yeah, me too. You have a great day. Thank you very much.
No, thank you very much. Have a nice day. My pleasure.
You too. Thank you for tuning in today to what an interesting episode we've just recorded now with Dr. Babayo Sule, a Nigerian scholar that is based in Lesotho. He's done a wonderful, wonderful job, you know, studying and writing and political parties in Nigeria, studying elections in Nigeria in Nigeria's Foreign Republic. So join me at Sujal to thank him for honoring our invitation, and stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.